It has been a happy week, one imagines, for Andy Ruiz Jr., who beat Anthony Joshua and became heavyweight boxing champion of the world a week ago. He is a man the media have since called fat a lot. He was called fat quite a bit. And media picked up this issue towards the end of last week, a study by local academics with a grand sort of title, Dissonance in Naming Adiposity, a quantitative survey of naming preferences from a convenient sample of health professional and lay populations in Aotearoa, New Zealand. And if it's a bit too early for your brain on a Sunday to decipher that fully, a simpler alternative comes to mind. Don't call people fat, study says. Leslie Gray is an Otago Medical School senior lecturer in the Department of Primary Healthcare and General Practice. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, kia ora.
Kia ora, what was the purpose of this study?
So far in New Zealand, no one had undertaken a study to ask people generally what their naming preferences were for excess fatness. Now, these types of studies have been carried out in other countries, and from our health professional perspective, we know that our healthcare professionals struggle with what they should call excess fatness.
Okay. Like adiposity. But haven't we always been polite, our health professionals, at least to people's faces? Because when my GP's wanted me to lose weight, he's never said to me, you're too fat. He said, you could lose a bit of weight.
Yes, so it does vary, but generally our general practitioners are very, very good and respectful. And of course, they have long-term relationships with us as patients. That's not to say that on occasion our healthcare professionals do use terms that we personally as patients might not like or might get upset with.
Yeah, I understand. But how many nurses and doctors do you think are saying to patients, you're fat?
We don't know that. I have had people say to me that they were very upset when their doctor told them they were obese.
There are interesting... Okay. And we'll get to the dehumanising aspect of that, which you mention in your study and which I think is quite important. But a comment I heard in the office was, are we in denial now about fat people being fat?
Well, we've always had fat people. I think we are getting more stigmatising. Implicit bias, we know, has gone up against fat people. I think that we've been bombarded with lots of obesity messages. So I think we are more likely to view a fat person as being, you know, the stereotypical unhealthy, which is not necessarily true.
You want us to stay away from terms like obesity even, don't you?
Really interesting, Jim. In the literature that Dr. Hales and myself publish in, quite a lot of those journals have historically required us to use the terms such as obesity and all the old words, we call them. We now have a bit of a shift globally in that some of the journals, they might still be using the terms obesity and obese, but they're asking people to use what's called person-first language. And that's not unique to obesity studies. We see that in lots of literature around disability, for example. So a lot of journals are now asking us to term these things such as people with obesity.
Is there much difference between calling someone an obese person and calling someone a person with obesity, though?
Yes, so person-first language would be a person with obesity because they are not obese. You know, obesity is not their defining feature. In the same way, somebody that lives with autism, they are not an autistic person. They're a person who just happens to live with autism.
Okay, I get that. But isn't morbid obesity, which I saw mentioned, isn't that a medical term pretty much?
Yes, it's a biomedical term for a particular type of measurement. And at the time that we ran this survey, New Zealand did use the term morbid obesity as a defining factor for what we call body mass index of people with a body mass index of 40 and above. So that's just a measure. Now, within the last 2 years, even New Zealand's Ministry of Health have moved away from using the term morbid obesity to using the term extreme obesity. The numbers are the same, but the terminology is changing.
Okay. It's interesting that people told you, Leslie, that calling fat people fat is an effective motivator if they are able to lose weight and need to, but you think it's counterproductive.
Well, actually, that's not what our survey asked. So the participants were asked, what do you think might be a motivator?
Yes.
And they were the terms. So the most stigmatizing and blaming terms were terms that people thought might be more motivating. But the reality is, we know those terms are not motivating at all. So we weren't asking people what motivates you to lose weight. We were saying, if you wanted to motivate somebody to lose weight, what do you think would be the terms that you would use?
Yeah, which is interesting because it reflects popular opinion. And so the question then is fat stigmatizing as an address, or is it blunt? Because when family conferences are called to discuss a family member's alcohol abuse or drug abuse or any kind of condition, really, that they think should be remedied and can be remedied, they kind of tell it like it is. They say, you're a drunk. So why doesn't that work for weight issues?
So what we know is that actually weight and excess weight, there are so many complex causes, some of which are also related to stress, lack of sleep. So when you look at weight stigma, we know now, because there are other studies that have been conducted, that actually working with adolescents, for example, and identifying with those adolescents who previously probably didn't even view themselves as overweight, but being labelled as overweight or living with obesity can actually be harmful to people, even at a young age. So we do see that eating disorders can develop just from feeling stigmatized. We also know that actually weight stigma can be harmful to health. So whilst you might think that telling somebody, blunt or not blunt, that they are overweight and that purely for their health they should lose weight, which is what some people think would be helpful, what we know is that actually that can harm.
And we can see the sense of that, I think, and eating disorders are tricky and almost in a special category. But if people who are overweight want to be less so, and it is within their power to be less so, don't we sometimes in life also have to be shamed and shocked into changing our behaviour?
There are different views on that. My view is shaming and shocking doesn't work. There will be other people who have their own views on that. Somebody who has self-identified that they wish to be a smaller size than they are now, that's a whole different conversation. And that doesn't necessarily come from people who live with excess fatness. So there are some people who are even of average or normal weight or less than average weight who still view themselves as needing to lose weight. So we've got to be very careful around just labelling a number, and in this instance, weight. Weight is not the defining factor for somebody's health.
Yeah. When you see the title of your paper, though, I mean, excessively adipose or too much avoirdupois,
yes,
are tiptoeing sort of terms, aren't they? They're almost humorous through being elaborately polite.
Well, dissonance was a term we used for the journal, and adiposity was also a term that we used for the journal, which is a medical journal. So, you know, understand that that was written in that frame. But if I'm speaking to someone around excess fatness, and I do use the term fat, but usually if I'm in a situation where I'm talking with someone and they have expressed that they are at a particular size and weight and they would like to be less than that, the first thing I will do is actually point out that losing massive amounts of weight is unusual. There aren't that many people who can do that. Being able to adjust the numbers downwards, if that's a person's wish, we can probably twiddle around the edges with about 20%. It's not all about lifestyle. If somebody's seeking to reduce their size and it would be appropriate to do so, about 5% can make a massive difference in terms of the health numbers. So, for example, if somebody has slightly higher HbA1c, for example, just losing about 5% can take the edge off that. Losing weight is not a short-term fix. People regain weight as well. But the first thing I would do in a clinical context, if somebody had said to me they would like to talk about size, shape or weight, I would say, now, what are the terms that you prefer?
You have previously acknowledged, I think, that fat activists have reclaimed the word fat, just as gay people commandeered queer, because these words are blunt and to the point and they don't obfuscate. So there's merit in that, obviously, for some people who have too much weight on.
So for people who prefer the term fat, fat's not a blunt term at all, it's just a descriptor. So, you know, there are people who will identify that they have fat, you know, they are fat, they have fatness around their body, and that's fine, that's a term. What was interesting in this paper was that the people that we surveyed, and we did have enough numbers to get statistical significant comparisons, was that fat was still not a term that people in this study viewed as being a helpful term. You know, it was still viewed in the more stigmatizing, more blaming.
You make a very interesting point that we dehumanize large people. We instantly stigmatize, as we do, sadly, in lots of areas. The question, I suppose, is whether it's any use trying to change that, because we make snap judgments and instant assessments, and I suppose we'll keep doing so, whatever the terms used are.
Yes, so what we know from other research is that explicit bias, that's actually gone down slightly across a whole load of discriminatory practices, not just size, shape, weight. Unfortunately for weight bias, implicit bias, so that's the things that we unconsciously have, that's actually gone up. I guess why I'm passionate around the weight issue is it's so sad that we have many more people globally these days who are in that higher weight bracket, and yet stigmatizing and blaming people who live with fatness seems to be acceptable. We seem to think that people that live with fatness are still fair go, a fair pop.
So,
and that's not fair.
No, it's not fair, but the most useful question is what works best to slim people down if they need to be slimmed down for the sake of their health? And if the problem's getting worse, do you think changing the names is going to help?
Okay, so that's biased in itself, in that there's a generic belief that people should be slimmer to be healthier, but down at an individual level, that does not mean that the individual beside you is either, you know, stereotypically lazy or unhealthy.
Yeah.
So that's a bias in itself. Slimming people down because of a problem, well, the question is, what problem? And in terms of slimming down, all of the public health activities to date in the last three decades have failed miserably to do this magic thing that people think is so easy.
Yeah. Last year, you and Victoria University's Kaz Hales, who you mentioned, called for the government to pass legislation ending discrimination against fat people. How on earth would you do that?
So there are some other countries that do call upon their governments to make legislation around people's human rights. Canada was the last one to look at that last year. Basically, my view is nobody should be discriminated against on the basis of their size, colour, you know, religious beliefs, anything. Why do we think it's okay to discriminate against people on the basis of their size?
But how would you enforce, how would that work in legislation? I mean, you could get around it every which way, couldn't you?
Well, there's lots of legislation for many other things.
I suppose so. But people would just discriminate and not say it's because the person is too large. Because this is the question you come back to, isn't it? We will always, unfortunately, discriminate against fatter people and people not as beautiful and shorter people and older people. It's a great pity, but it's there and people know it's there.
You're right, it is there. I question why we should not seek to change that.
Yeah. Well, it's a noble cause. Good to be able to talk to you. And an interesting topic. Leslie Gray, thanks so much for joining us. And Leslie's PhD is going to be about, at least in part, how people with high BMI are often left behind in times of disaster. People get left behind because of their size, which is really interesting.